Hi, I'm Richard Karn, and you may have seen me on TV talking about the world's number one expandable garden hose. Well, the brand new Pocket Hose Copperhead with Pocket Pivot is here, and it's a total game changer. Old-fashioned hoses get kinks and creases at the spigot, but the Copperhead's Pocket Pivot swivels 360 degrees for full water flow and freedom to water with ease all around your home. When you're all done, this rust-proof anti-burst hose shrinks back down to pocket size for effortless handling and tidy storage. Plus, your super light and ultra-durable pocket hose Copperhead is backed with a 10-year warranty. What could be better than that? I'll tell you what, an exciting radio exclusive offer just for you. For a limited time, you can get a free pocket pivot and their 10-pattern sprayer with the purchase of any size Copperhead hose. Just text WATER to 64000. That's WATER to 64000 for your two free gifts with purchase. W-A-T-E-R to 64000.
By texting 64000, you agree to receive recurring automated marketing messages from Pocket Hose. Message and data rates may apply. No purchase required. Terms apply. Available at pockethose.com/terms.
Welcome, everybody, into Redacted on this Wednesday. I'm Clayton Morris.
I'm Natalie Morris.
So glad to have you here. On this show, we cover the news, cover the stories that the mainstream media largely ignores. We try to cut through the propaganda, and we are not funded by billionaires, so we get to tell the truth here. We are user supported, so you guys support us, joining us live at 4 p.m. Eastern time, and then we try to navigate through all of this big pile of garbage, this clown world that we're currently living in. So this was an amazing moment. One of the stories we're going to cover tonight was Ukraine admitting on television what is actually happening in the war. And then that television network decided to pull down the interview and hide that it ever even happened. This is how the deep state operates. We're going to talk to ex-CIA analyst Larry Johnson about what this means for the war. What does the future portend for this conflict? And we're also going to look at 9/11. So the 9/11 attacks, we have some really unbelievable news on the 9/11 attacks. We might actually start to get some answers because a family has now been able to move forward with an inquest in the United Kingdom. The Attorney General in the United Kingdom came back and said, yes, we're going to actually allow this to move forward. So what answers will we get? The controlled demolition of the towers? Will we find out that information? We will get to that tonight.
Plus, we're going to take a look at the new Novavax COVID vaccine that was approved by the FDA today. Clayton, would you like to take a guess how many clinical trials were done?
If I was a betting man, I would say zero.
Zero. How many animal trials were done?
Did they use like six mice?
Zero.
Zero.
Zero animals. Zero clinical trials.
Sign
We're going to tell
up.
You exactly why the FDA decided that was a great idea.
And also, we've got a very special guest. Dr. William Mackis is going to be joining us from Canada on some unbelievable news as it relates to turbo cancers. But for that story a little bit later in the show, we're going to have to move exclusively to Rumble because YouTube will not allow us to cover that story here on the show.
Oh, and we also are going to talk about, that's not in the rundown, net neutrality as well is back, you guys.
Yeah.
Democrats all of a sudden decided that they are for free speech.
Yeah.
It's an amazing flip-flop. We're going to talk about that coming to an arguing Democrat near you. All of that and more as Redacted starts right now.
Welcome in, everyone. So glad to have you all here on this Wednesday. Thank you guys so much for joining us. Let us know from around the world where you are finding us tonight. I always love seeing the furthest locations from us or, you know, the most unique locations. It doesn't have to be unique. I guess I love seeing Louisiana. I saw Cameroon the other night, Iceland,
yeah.
South Africa. So great to see all of you.
Everywhere is exotic in its own way.
Yeah. And by the way, we're not going to be live tomorrow night. We have the day off tomorrow, but so we'll be doing a little bit of traveling. But so it'd be great to see if anyone sees us in airports and so forth. Please say hello. We always love seeing you guys.
Yeah. Tap us on the shoulder.
That's right.
Say hello.
Punch us in the nuts.
Don't say in front of our kids, like someone did, how are you still alive for telling all this truth? So you can whisper it to us, but my mother-in-law didn't like hearing that last time.
I loved it. I was like, hey, nice to meet you in London.
And our children and our mother-in-law was at Clayton's mom. We're like, what?
Yeah, we were all together. He said, I don't know. I love your show. He said, how are you still alive with all the truth that you guys do on the show? And I was like, I don't know.
Well, but let's all knock on wood. Can you knock on wood at your house too, please? We would appreciate that. In the meantime, we're going to tell you a different place that you can find us. You can find the newsletter that we do every day, Monday through Thursday, the same days that this show comes out. And it is a compendium to this very show. So it has a lot of the same stories that we do in this show, but it's in written form. It's also a great place for you to find the links to those stories and read those things for yourself so that you can see whether or not you agree on our take. I love to hear when you do or when you don't, when people write me about the newsletter. So put in your email address, just authenticate with the email that we send you saying, yes, I meant to sign up for this. And then you are a redacted rebel. It's a totally free subscription. Free newsletter, free subscription. All you have to do is just open it up and enjoy. And again, you can find it free at redacted.inc. Again, it's our beloved newsletter. We have no people that write it with us. It's just Clayton and I. So again, it's redacted.inc.
We're getting some unbelievable admissions now in the war in Ukraine. First from the Ukrainian side, and also from reports of captured Ukrainian soldiers high on some kind of drugs that are, I guess, propelling them on the front lines to do things they wouldn't otherwise do, according to reports. But we're also getting now reports from the Ukrainian side, unbelievable admission about where this war is going from a member of Ukrainian's own parliament. Now, this interview was featured on Sky News. Sky News has now deleted this interview. Was it something she said? Listen.
It's the latest situation. The counteroffensive is going as planned. Well, as much as we can have it going as planned with the amount of weapons and the quality of the ammunition that we're getting. The steadier the deliveries and the bigger the deliveries of the armaments for Ukraine, the faster the counteroffensive can go.
That's problem the problem is you've regained, what, less than 1% of the ground that you lost before the invasion?
Unfortunately, that is
And you only have, like, another month to go before...
Another month or so before the cold and the winter settles in, before we can before we will have to actually pause until the springtime. And this is the sad news for us, and I think not just for us, but all the countries that are supporting Ukraine right now.
Is that continuing? Because I get the impression, I'm certainly told, that there is... you're having to try harder and harder to get aid, specifically from Europe and other Western countries.
It is getting harder and harder because Russia is winning the battle of a protracted conflict today.
So they are winning?
In terms of protracted conflict strategies that they're trying to impose on Ukraine and the world, unfortunately, we have to say that they are gaining the upper hand yet again. They have done this back in 2014. The lessons weren't learned. The aid was being delivered too slowly and at a non-stable rate, and this is the results that we are getting. I am a firm believer that Russia could have been stopped with their escalation of the aggression in February 2022, when Ukraine was asking for weapons through January, through October, November, December 2021, but was not being taken seriously, and when the offer on the table for us Ukrainians was to surrender to Putin's demands.
So Ukraine is running out of time, they're running out of weapons, they're running out of personnel. And we wanted to bring in ex-CIA analyst Larry Johnson, who follows this all very closely, to dive into this. Larry, a couple of big things I want to cover with you today. But first, I just want to get your response to what this woman, Leslie, has said about the truth about what's happening in Ukraine right now. They're admitting Russia's winning.
Yeah, well, it's evident if anybody's just been paying attention. Look at social media. Social media is the one thing that no government in the world can completely, fully control. They can try to shut it down. So when you go to social media, you see row upon row upon row of Ukrainian flags fluttering over freshly dug graves. Thousands of these. You don't see that in Russia.
Right.
So right there, it tells you right away that the casualties are in Ukraine. The average age of the soldier fighting on the front lines for Ukraine is 40 years old. That means you may have one or two who are 17 or 18, but you got a lot more who are over the age of 40. That speaks to a manpower loss. Just put the losses in context. Right now, it's estimated that Ukraine has lost over 500,000 men killed in action.
Wow.
During World War II, the British, the United Kingdom, its entire killed in action in both Europe, Africa, and the Pacific was 345,000. That was after 6 years of war. So we need to understand that what's unfolding right now in Ukraine is unbelievable carnage.
And the winter approaching. She admits that only a few weeks left, of course, until the cold weather, the immobilization of these troops, and basically admitting whatever sort of counteroffensive they had, they haven't really gained anything at all. In fact, it's been maybe inches here and there, and over close to 100,000 killed now just in this counteroffensive.
Yeah, yeah. What people didn't understand is that the defensive lines that Surovikin erected a year ago, they were not designed like the Alamo, where you stand and fight and, you know, Jim Bowie laying on his bed, throwing a Bowie knife as he's getting killed. Right. They are designed to be flexible. So when they come in, they bend, and then the Ukrainians go into what's called a salient, and then they get attacked from the side, and they're forced back out. So it's think of it more like a rubber band. But the truth of the matter is, and it was even reported by the New York Times, is that total land captured, Russia's captured far more than Ukraine. But this isn't about capturing land. It's about the question of, do you have a force that is trained, that you can sustain in the field, and that has a good logistics flow to it? And that's what's breaking down on the Ukrainian side. They're utterly dependent upon money from the West and weapons from the West. And in the last two or three days, we've had the British even admit, hey, we've run out. We don't have any more to send.
Right. This is a big revelation from the British side. We don't have any weapons to send. And we're out of money to send. And according to Ben Wallace, a former UK defense secretary, says Zelensky must start mobilizing young Ukrainians more. So now you've exhausted just about everything. Now let's start going into the youngest of the young and throwing them onto the front lines. And as you've been reporting on your Telegram and on your website, the countless number of young Ukrainian men in the funerals, the funeral processions that you're not seeing in Western coverage. I mean, open caskets of Ukrainian soldiers, weeping mothers, weeping wives, people lining the streets as caskets are being brought down the Ukrainian streets. And you're not going to see that on CNN.
Right. Now, and it's what it's doing to the Ukrainian population. You know, look back again at World War II as a benchmark, as a reference point. The United States lost 472,000 killed in action in the Pacific and Europe and Africa. And we had a population then of about 160 million. Here's Ukraine, whose population right now in country is estimated to be around 25 million. And they've lost more people, more men than either, you know, the United States or Britain did during World War II. So this is approaching sort of, it's reminiscent more of the Chaco War back in Paraguay, where you lost an entire generation of men. And it's going to depopulate Ukraine. There will be nobody to have children. There will be no fathers.
What about, you've been covering this as well, and we wanted to talk about the drugs that are being used. Can you speak about this with these soldiers and the reports of this?
Well, this comes from a Russian correspondent, his name is Marat. And I was conversing with him yesterday, and he says, you know, what kind of drugs could these guys be using? And he says, they're picking up these prisoners and they're just whacked out of their minds. And he says that they actually go through withdrawal. He says some of them, it takes up to a week. And he says, but the effect of the drug is it takes away any reservation about putting themselves at risk. Now, I know in the early days when Delta Force and SEAL Team 6 were first set up in the United States, there were drugs that were given to these soldiers either to help them go to sleep or to keep them awake. And so that's 40 years ago. So I am willing to guess in the last 40 years, there's been some medical research. In fact, there were a lot of DARPA labs there in Ukraine. And if they were doing medical research, biological research into drugs that you can give to people that will eliminate any inhibition about putting their lives at risk and turn them into sort of super soldiers, I think that's what we may be seeing here. Because this was not a piece of propaganda. He wasn't trying to feed me a story. He was legitimately puzzled by it. He says, you know, we've never seen anything like this.
It's unbelievable. So then they're being, after they're captured or after they're surrendering, I mean, do we even know if these are surrendered soldiers or captured? Because if they're on these drugs, the chances of them surrendering are probably, I don't know, maybe slim to none, but that's just my conjecture, you know?
Yeah, these are captured. These are ones that are capturing on the front lines. And the situation has turned, it's really so dire for the Ukrainians, because unless, if you're wounded and you've been shot or you've caught some fragments, if you can walk out or if you can move yourself, then you can probably get medical care. But there are reports that people, that soldiers that have been wounded are having to pay bribes to get themselves taken back to a medical aid station on the Ukrainian side. So the morale on the Ukrainian side is just suffering some really significant setbacks.
Can you also talk about the soldiers and the reports that you've had? This has been fascinating to see the lack of armored personnel carriers, the lack of armored vehicles and so forth. And now Ukrainian soldiers being forced to go on foot and or bicycle to attack the Russians. What do we know about that?
Yeah, there's one video has popped up on social media, on Telegram. And this guy has got a bicycle with a bunch of landmines strapped to it. And he's moving them forward along a dirt road. The reality is the armored vehicles are a target. And Ukraine doesn't have any way to protect them. In a normal conventional army, if it was functioning properly, there would be some air cover, fixed-wing aircraft, helicopters. There would be some mobile artillery so that they could at least lay down a field of fire as these guys would move forward. Well, they don't have that. That's not happening. The Russians, on the other hand, have ample amounts of artillery ammunition. They've got the fixed-wing aircraft. They've got the helicopters. And so they're able to just devastate anybody in an armored vehicle or a tank. So they've come up, their solution is to try to infiltrate guys in on foot. I don't know if you've ever carried a box of ammunition, but a box of 308 ammunition weighs over 40 pounds.
Yeah, it's very heavy.
And you will shoot through that. If you load that up in any kind of automatic weapon, you will go through that in a period of about 15 minutes. So just the amount of weight you have to carry, putting soldiers in this position makes they're combat ineffective. And you're forgetting about, what about the food? What about the water?
Right.
You know, water itself is heavy. Go fill up a couple of gallon jugs of water and walk around with those. Well,
right.
How much water do you think a guy on the front line needs? So these very practical considerations, the thing that touting, well, hey, they're walking in on foot, that's a great strategy, that's ridiculous.
Well, one of the things that famously U.S. Grant became president of the United States, General Ulysses S. Grant, during the Civil War, was famous for was making sure that everyone had provisions and everything was fully stocked.
Yeah.
And making sure that reinforcements were there, and all of the army will break down and collapse without the water, without the food, without the provisions, without the ammunition, without all of those things. It may seem to other people's minds secondary to the fighting, but in fact, it is the most important part of the fighting.
Yeah. And in fact, that was, go back to World War II. One of the signs of the collapse of Germany was you saw German soldiers in horse carts. So they were driving horses to pull artillery pieces. They didn't have the fuel to run the vehicles. So that's a sign of collapse. It's a sign of this thing is going to come to an end, and it may come to a very rapid end, just like what we saw in Afghanistan. Remember, we were promised that the Afghan army was going to fight on for years,
yeah.
And they were the best in the area, and then boom, overnight, they were gone in a week. So that I actually think that is a possibility here with respect to Ukraine.
What are your intelligence sources telling you as it relates to this back and forth right now? It sounds like we're seeing a couple of media reports. You know, we've seen a couple of mainstream media reports that are showing some negativity towards towards Ukraine. Politico releasing that leaked State Department memo showing the corruption, the State Department admitting to the massive amount of corruption inside of Ukraine, and a couple of other odd timed mainstream media pieces about Ukraine being corrupt, about them, their offensive collapsing. And then, of course, we have this turnover in Congress right now with funding going into Ukraine, the British saying they have no more weapons. It all smells funny to me, but I'm not I'm not an ex-CIA analyst. So on the outside, Larry, what's going on here?
There's a brawl underway. There's a big fight. So when I first got in to the CIA and we first held clearances and started seeing classified information, I quickly discovered that when you've got a policy issue that everybody agrees on, there are never any leaks. That, you know, it's kept close, tight. Hmm. The leaks come when there is fighting between people with different points of view about what's going on. And so when you see, and so this leak out of State Department is significant as well, because that is so damning in terms of the corruption argument, because it feeds into what many Republicans have been arguing, that there is no financial controls over the aid that's being sent to Ukraine. And it's being, and it's being siphoned off. I mean, 60 Minutes reported on that a year ago and then took down the report or edited it out to make sure they could cover that up. So when you see these kinds of leaks, it's a sign that the unity that was once there in the U.S. government is no longer exists. And it's only going to get worse. It's not going to get better.
Fascinating. Fascinating. Larry Johnson, always great to see you. Encourage everyone to read. Can you tell everyone your website and where people can go to read more about your daily coverage?
Sure. My primary site is sonar21.com, S-O-N-A-R-2-1.com.
That's right. And Larry was telling me before you and I were texting a little bit earlier about like the amount of people who've been really coming in and reading your site. So the traffic, I think people are really seeking the truth there, which is amazing. So keep up the amazing work. As always, Larry, great to see you. Really appreciate it.
Thanks, Clayton.
Thanks, Larry.
It's a really, somber truth.
Yeah, that's really great. Thanks, Larry. Appreciate it. And, you know, it's one of those things where, you know, Larry's website being hit by so many people coming there, which is great. You know, people seeking the truth and looking for answers. So our thanks to Larry for taking some time out and talking with us. But this is unbelievable. You have this admission from Ukraine on television and then Sky News makes it disappear. Like, oops, we can't have you saying that.
Yeah.
Oh, you just admitted the truth live on television. Can delete from the website. It's just, it reminds me of when Fox News did that with Bret Baier interviewing Zelensky about the Azov battalion. You know, good luck finding those clips.
Yeah.
You know, thank God to social media for saving those things. But yeah, good luck finding that on Fox's website.
Right.
You won't find it.
Well, we have more news to get to coming up. We're going to talk about new revelations about 9/11 and possible opportunity for answers out of the new litigation. We're also going to talk about the latest COVID vaccine that was approved by the FDA by Novavax and how little they know about it. They willingly say that. We're going to take a look at that. Plus, net neutrality is back as a debate we are going to have. It is much different now than it was during the Obama years because I'm just going to give away the lead a little bit. It's a government power grab for censorship. I'm going to make that case. I don't think I'm going to have to persuade you all that hard, but it is written out in black and white, and we're going to look at that as well.
Yeah, that's right. So we're going to get to all of that and more, but first...
First, we want to tell you about our friends over at Bank on Yourself, because do you know the whole max out your IRA or 401k is usually a ruse to convince you to invest in the stock market with the government as your partner. So, you know, those commercials you see on NFL Sunday, this is pretty much a lie. It's propaganda. They're telling you that if you risk your life savings in a Wall Street casino, that's a secure investment for the future. Yet studies show that the average American who follows that advice will outlive their savings by 10 years because the usual withdrawal amount, the average person withdraws about 90K at full retirement. Well, you can't live on 90K for 10 years, for the whole rest of your life, you're going to have some other plan. That's why Bank on Yourself is a better way to grow and protect your hard-earned money. This retirement plan alternative has never had a losing year in over 160 years because it is guaranteed predictable growth and retirement income. With Bank on Yourself, your plan doesn't go backwards when the markets tumble. Your principal and growth are locked in. You get tax-free retirement income. You'll know what your tax rate is. When you retire, it will be zero under current tax law, which protects you from the coming tax tsunami. Because the government just wants to spend our money, they need to tax you in order to do that. Paycheck employees are the easiest, the lowest hanging fruit for them to get their hands on. So right now, you need to make sure that you are banking for your tax rate at retirement. And in a Bank on Yourself plan, it will be zero. So if you want guaranteed predictable annual growth, control of your money, and tax-free retirement, then go to bankonyourself.com/redacted, and you'll get a free report with the proven retirement plan alternative that banks and Wall Street are desperately hoping you never hear about. Just go to bankonyourself.com/redacted for your free report. That's bankonyourself.com/redacted.
Well, a major breakthrough now in one family's mission to finally get answers around the 9/11 attacks. And how did their son die on that day, Jeff Campbell? Did jets really bring down the Twin Towers, or was it a controlled demolition, as the evidence seemed to suggest, including eyewitness accounts of what happened on that day? We had Matt Campbell on the show a number of months ago, the brother of Jeff Campbell, who has been fighting to get answers about what happened to their son from the UK. And now we have some major possible good news in this, in the search for answers. Ted Walter is the co-founder of the International Center for 9/11 Studies. He's been dedicating his life to getting answers for the families of the victims of 9/11. And Ted joins us now with a pretty big breakthrough, I think, in this case. Ted, can you kind of set the stage for us, the email that you received, you and the Campbell family received, in trying to get answers about this inquest?
Yeah, thanks so much for having me, Clayton. So last Friday, a week and a half ago, the family and their barrister, Nick Stanage, received an email from the Attorney General's office. Now, this is the Attorney General for England and Wales, so it's pretty much the equivalent to our Attorney General. And the email was basically notifying them that the Attorney General was withdrawing the decision that the Attorney General had issued a few months ago in late June to deny the family their application, seeking the authority from the Attorney General to apply to the High Court for a fresh inquest. So there's a few hoops that the family has to jump through to get their new inquest, but essentially the Attorney General said no back in June. And then the family wrote a letter to the Attorney General early September, September 11th, actually, saying that they would seek judicial review. Essentially, they would appeal the Attorney General's decision, and they laid out all of their reasons why the Attorney General's decision was totally unlawful and irrational. And, you know, the family didn't know how the Attorney General was going to respond to that. They were prepared to file their documents on September 26th. And just a couple of days before that, the Attorney General responded withdrawing the decision. So it's almost the only better outcome that could have occurred at this juncture was for the Attorney General to completely change the decision. The Attorney General has done almost that. They've withdrawn the decision to deny the application, and they've said that a new decision will be coming in due course. And we anticipate, we're very confident that the new decision is going to be positive, because there's no reasonable grounds upon which to deny the application.
So the inquest, at the heart of the inquest, is trying to get answers about how their son died. Now, as part of the UK government, sadly, pieces of the body are recovered and sent back to the UK, under the government, under the law, the family has a right to seek an inquest as to how that person died. And it's amazing we really haven't had the equivalency in the United States, right? I mean, this could be our one big chance to find out exactly how he died that day and whether or not jets were responsible or whether or not there was a controlled demolition of those towers.
Absolutely. And I have to give the UK judicial system some credit for having this function of having an inquest anytime there's an unnatural death. It's not a civil case. It's not a criminal case. It's a separate legal process where a coroner, who is a judicial officer, establishes the cause of death. Now, the family and nine other victims, Jeff Campbell and nine other victims, there were inquests held for them back in 2013, all as one. And the conclusion, which is what the family is challenging, is that the impact of the airplane, in Jeff's case, the North Tower, Flight 11 into the North Tower, caused the tower's collapse at 10:28 a.m. That's what it says in the official conclusion, the cause of death for Jeff. So that's what the family is challenging. And their grounds for challenging that are very strong. First of all, they have new evidence, thousands of pages of evidence that was not considered at the first inquest. So that is one ground for reopening it. And it's not the Attorney General's decision place to decide whether that evidence is compelling or how compelling it is. If there's even a remote possibility that the new evidence could change the original conclusion, a new inquest must be held if the family wants it. Secondly, they're challenging that the coroner in 2013 actually didn't investigate or even consider the causation between of how the building collapsed. There was absolutely no discussion of it during the inquest, and yet she wrote that into the official conclusion. So that's sort of an open and shut case. That's another grounds for challenging this insufficiency of inquiry. So when the family got the decision back from the Attorney General, I mean, this is a slam dunk case. And the decision in June, which the family had to wait almost 2 years for, was completely unlawful. It did not apply the correct legal tests that I just described. And it made irrational statements like the eyewitness and scientific evidence of controlled demolition would not have an impact or any bearing on the original verdict. And that's, I think, as you pointed out when you were talking to Matt, it's ridiculous. Yeah.
Right. So wait a minute. It wouldn't have any bearing on the original ruling. So now we have all this evidence that it was a controlled demolition. All of the thousands of pages of documents and evidence have come out now. And that wouldn't have any bearing on the fact that the buildings probably would never have gone down if it wasn't for the controlled demolition of the buildings, right? As you've covered on our show, fires in large skyscrapers have never in the history of skyscrapers brought a building down. Fires, just a simple fire, which is what happened after the planes crashed into the towers. A controlled demolition is arguably the only reason that those towers came down. That's a huge piece of this puzzle.
Yeah, it is. And the decision was just, it was mind-boggling. And I think a lot of people, a lot of supporters in the 9/11 community sort of thought, well, of course, that was always the way it was going to go, right? The Attorney General is going to deny their application. But in reality, the Attorney General doesn't have any discretion. They're supposed to apply a simple legal test to the application that the family submitted 2 years ago, and they failed to do that. And the fact that they withdrew their decision, which our barrister, Nick Stanage, has advised, is extremely rare. I mean, he's never heard of a case of where the Attorney General has withdrawn the decision before undergoing judicial review, is an indication of just how weak their decision was.
Why do you think they reversed their decision? I mean, it was a pretty crazy decision in the first place, and I think everyone in who's following the story was pretty dejected by it. Oh, here we go. Our one chance of getting answers, we just hit a wall now. Why do you think they reversed course?
Well, the simple answer is that their decision is not defensible. And if it had gone to judicial review, it would have been struck down. And so maybe didn't feel like fighting a fight that they knew they were going to lose. That would take months, if not years. And that would also cost a lot. And so in British law, there's a possibility where if the Campbell family had eventually won their case, and we had gone through months or years of litigation, that the Attorney General would have had to reimburse the Campbell family for their costs, which could total tens of thousands or even hundreds of thousands of dollars. Hmm. So the Attorney General was like, you know what? Let's not do this. Let's withdraw this decision. We know that we're going to lose. And we don't see any way there's a possibility. Who knows? You know, I think your viewers may say, be rightly skeptical of the authorities anywhere in the UK or in the US, what have you, and say, oh, well, they got some other trick up their sleeve. We really don't think that there's any way that they can, you know, have a viable argument for why this application should not go forward, you know, and so we're confident. And if they do, we will go through the process that we were already about to initiate of seeking judicial review and eventually winning in a court of law. But let's hope we don't have to go there. And we should have a decision within a couple months.
So after the decision in a couple of months, we go through the review process. Then what? We actually have an inquest. And can you, before I'll get you out of here on that question. What does the inquest look like? How long could the inquest take? And will it be impartial, or are we just waiting for the inevitable whitewashing of it and they're going to sweep it back under the rug once again during the inquest?
Yeah, really good questions. So the next step, if the Attorney General grants her authority for the Campbell family to apply to the High Court for a fresh inquest, is that the Campbell family will do that. There's one more hoop to jump through, which is the High Court. The High Court historically has always ruled the way that the Attorney General has ruled. So there's not much doubt that that would be successful. And then once the High Court grants the fresh inquest and quashes the original one, it'll probably be about a year before the inquest gets started. And this inquest would be held by the West London Coroner, the West London Coroner's Court. Our barrister advises that it would probably take 2 to 4 weeks, the actual process of the inquest. And we will be in court, Matt Campbell and his family, the barrister, members of my organization, International Center for 9/11 Justice, will be in court making the case that these buildings were brought down by controlled demolition. And we, Nick, our barrister, he's an assistant coroner, right? So he actually serves as a coroner himself. And so he understands this system very well. He's quite confident that we're going to get an objective assessment of the evidence, unbiased, fact-based assessment. And we will make sure of that. Now, we want the coroner to bring in the National Institute of Standards and Technology. We would love for the coroner to look at all of the evidence, look at all of the arguments, and realize that the evidence is overwhelming that it was controlled demolition. So that's the process that we're looking at happening a year and a half from now. And this is going to be huge headlines if it happens. Like, it's, inquests are widely reported in the UK. In any inquest on any sort of, notable case is widely reported on. And of course, this is going to, if we are successful, and we are optimistic, this will galvanize, we think, many dozens, hundreds, even thousands of 9/11 family members to also seek the truth and seek justice. And it really could be a turning point.
Yeah, I think that's the understatement of the year. This could make headlines. Yes, yeah. if the inquest allows that evidence to come forward to show that this was a controlled demolition, and I mean, it's a game changer. I mean, everything that people think they know about the 9/11 attacks is going to be turned on its head. And I would encourage our audience to go and watch our deep dive interview on the controlled demolition piece of this. We didn't spend a lot of time on it today because you and I have sat down and done nearly an hour-long interview about the specifics of the controlled demolition. So we'll link that up in the description below. People can go and check and watch that whole interview. Also, my interview with Kevin Ryan, where we detailed how the hijackers were clearly not responsible for bringing those planes down. And that's equally compelling. So the work that you're doing, shining a light on this is second to none. So Ted, thank you so much for this. Thank you for the big update. And we are hopeful that maybe we'll get some answers. Thank you so much, Ted.
Thank you, Clayton. Really appreciate it.
Yeah, you bet, Ted. Thank you. And again, thanks to the team there at the Center for 9/11 Studies, basically diving into this and really shining a light on it. And so thank you so many of you who watched our documentary, also our interview with Kevin Ryan. I encourage all of you to watch that over the past few days, where we went and did a deep dive on the hijackers and how there's really no possible way that they could have actually carried out the takeover of those airplanes. So dive into that interview with Kevin Ryan. Amazing stuff here. So thank you guys so much for allowing us to shine a light on the 9/11 attacks, because I think it's time.
Yeah. Well, we have a lot more stories to get to. And also, I'd like to point out a chat that we just saw. Do you want to highlight this?
Yeah. Viewer? So Jeff Costello, thank you for this kind chat here in YouTube. Jeff says, from Wilmington, North Carolina, he says, I ran into a redacted fan at a local grocery store. She saw my redacted t-shirt and she stopped me to say hello and make sure the redacted on my shirt was Natalie and Clayton's show. And that's so awesome. I love that.
I'm tickled pink by that. Thank you for sharing that.
Two viewers running into the grocery store. That's awesome.
Yeah. I wish I was there too.
More of you out there. That'd be amazing. Can you imagine the turning off CNN, turning off Fox News, and turning to independent media? That's amazing. So thank you, Jeff. And thanks to the lady that said hello to you.
All right. Well, we're going to talk about COVID vaccines and the latest FDA approval. They are based on So I can't even say smoke and mirrors, but you decide for yourself. We're going to go through that. We're also going to talk about this new debate on net neutrality, how it is yet another government power grab. And we're going to have a guest telling us about recent upticks in turbo cancers. And you can take a guess why you think that is, but listen to the expert. We're going to bring you that on Rumble only. So those two data points, the fact that it'll be on Rumble only, may give you a clue.
And it's
but don't jump to conclusions.
And Dr. William Mackis is going to be joining us from Canada. So it's a this is the first time that Dr. Mackis is going to be joining us here on the show. Of course, the mainstream media has attacked him, tried to fact check him, but he's not giving up. He's doing amazing work. So he's going to be joining us in just a little bit here on the show. But first, we want to tell you about our friends over at Moomoo. It's our favorite trading platform, and you can get up to 16 free stocks right now just by signing up using our link right there on your screen. If you go to redacted.inc/Moomoo, you can get up to 16 free stocks just for opening your account and making your initial deposits in the account. And they're giving away a free Tesla stock or a free Google stock, depending. You get one of the other along with your other free stocks. Even if you never do anything else with this account, you just open it, you get those free stocks, you can let them grow. I mean, each of these stocks is worth like hundreds of dollars. So you just let them grow in the account. You could then sell them for cash if you need it. You know, just let them sit there, treat it like a savings account. Again, you don't have to invest in other things, but just use it. But I love using it. I use it every day. I use Moomoo every day. And now they've opened in Australia and Canada. And to our Australian viewers, you're going to get some nice bonuses when you use that link as well. You'll get some nice sign-up bonuses just for welcoming you to Australia on using the Moomoo app. And Canada, again, now open as well. So Moomoo is very, very simple. It has zero commission trades. And the app looks amazing on every platform, from iOS to Android to Windows and Mac. Moomoo can help you trade with its advanced tools like their stock screeners, their earnings calendars. No matter what your skill level is, you'll find fantastic tools that can help you trade. And inside the Moomoo app, they even have like a university structure. So you can actually take some classes and learn about how to trade, learn about different commodities, how the different markets work. I personally invest in a lot of different mineral stocks and commodity stocks like oil and uranium and things like that. You can do all of that right inside of Moomoo. So redacted.inc/Moomoo is the place to go to get those free stocks. Redacted.inc/Moomoo.
All right. Well, we now have a buffet of COVID vaccines to choose from based on this latest FDA approval. It's the non-mRNA COVID vaccine from Novavax, and they have approved it for anyone over the age of 12 or 12 and older. Did they run clinical trials? They did not. Did they run trials on animals like last year's COVID vaccines? No. They say that they approved this based on previous safety and effectiveness data. That's not even a clinical trial. That's not even what this is. It's just that they looked at the previous round of Novavax and said, this one's probably the same. It's not. It's not at all the same. The previous one was two doses. This one's only one.
Isn't there a law against that? Like if I wanted to come out with my own thing.
No.
Like, hey guys, tonight on Redacted, I've come up with my own shot. I'm going to do that tonight. And I mix some stuff up, and I think it's safe based on other data that I read. You guys want to try it?
That's actually more common than you think, but the Pfizer and the Moderna vaccine was approved with the very same method. We showed you that when that was approved in September. What they did was they evaluated the data from the rollout of the first COVID vaccine and said, this one's probably the same, approved. They had no clinical trials for this one. So as I was thinking about that, I want to talk more about what this vaccine, what they at least tell us, what they're admitting to. But I was thinking about all of the new pharmaceuticals that we've covered in the last, let's say, 6 months that have been approved based on either emergency use authorization or fast track or something that they call priority review, meaning they speed it to market. So I went through just the ones we've talked about recently. Now, here's a short list that I made. So Arexvy was the RSV vaccine for 65 and over. They gave that priority review. They did do some clinical trials, but they did not show us them in totality. You may remember we talked about this. Beyfortus was the RSV shot. It's not a vaccine for babies. They fast-tracked it. They also did clinical trials, but they never gave us the data from that clinical trials. You may remember that we talked about this. It only said not available. Zurzuvae, the postpartum depression pill,
that flows off
was
the tongue.
Also fast-tracked, did not do clinical trials. The COVID vaccine from Pfizer and Moderna was given emergency use authorization, no clinical trials. And the COVID vaccine Novavax, now emergency use authorization, no clinical trials. So
how, and they're getting emergency use authorization,
yes,
for this one. Also
this
still
one also,
what emergency?
Well, that's a great question, Clayton. They explain it Thank in you. Their letter to Novavax. Take a look here at what they say. They said, we have determined that there is a public health emergency or a significant potential
what?
For a public health emergency. So when you're asking why are we doing this, it's like, it could be serious, so we're going to rush it. Well, it also could be unsafe. We're making that calculation for you. Like, the vaccine could have some problems. We're choosing not to study it because there's a potential.
There's a potential for an emergency.
That, yes, there's a public health emergency.
So then under that authorization, every year then they could lay claim to flu shots and all of that stuff, right? I mean,
yes.
This could just be a permanent emergency. And this is like emergency use powers for these guys, the same way that Biden is holding on to emergency wartime powers.
Right. Absolutely right. So, you know, and you have to ask yourself, is this now how we approve fast tracks now so that everything can get a fast track and nothing then has to have clinical trials by that rationale, right? Why would you ever do a clinical trial knowing that, I mean, think about the RSV injectable. They were giving it to pregnant women and it was causing them to go into preterm labor and killing the babies. And so they're like, well, we have to stop that. They still don't have that one out yet because they had that happening. Think about if they could make the case for emergency use, then they would only know that these preterm babies were dying based on what they call it phase four of the clinical trials, which means it's data that we're going to get to this more. It's data that they collect when they've already released it to market. So let's go back to this one that we're talking about. Where were we? Potential. Okay, so let's talk about the Novavax vaccine. How does the FDA know that it is safe and effective? They don't. Here is from the Novavax fact sheet that comes with the vaccine. It says clinical trials results and supporting data. Now that's misleading because they had no clinical trials. They're just saying this is based on the effectiveness of the previous Novavax COVID-19 vaccine, the original monovalent, and then the Omicron BA1 and the monovalent Omicron BA5. So they don't have any for this current recipe. They don't think they need it. They made a new shot. This one is single dose. It's not a double dose like the last one. But again, they're just like, probably the same. Again, this is hardly apples to apples, given that this one is only one vaccine. Also, the Novavax vaccine that we're talking about now is updated to include the Omicron strain XBB.1.5. Well, you may remember that, was it Jimmy Kimmel? What are the Jimmys? The late night talk show did that like XBB.1.5.
That was Jimmy Fallon.
Okay. Yeah. Yes. That guy.
Well, he did that stupid thing. And then
that was a long time ago.
What's the other guy who the late show with Stephen Colbert did the vaccine dance?
Yeah.
You know, with the giant.
So you may remember that is a lame joke. It's long since passed its lifetime because XBB.1.5 is not very prevalent at all in the United States. Look at the CDC tracker. It's hard to see here where XBB.1.5 is. I highlighted it here. It says that it represents a 1.1% of all COVID cases right now. And so if I sort of scroll over it, and let's just look at that in a bar graph, how much that is. We'll go to the next one. This green here, not that one. Yes. See, the green is XBB.1.5. It's not very prevalent at all. So EG5 is the dominant strain right now. Why would you get an untested vaccine for a dying out strain that is no longer even prevalent?
Because it's an emergency.
For the potential.
It's a potential emergency.
Potentially. Yes.
So it's not effective.
It's a non-zero probability.
Yeah. It's an emergency. Go grab it.
Now, what are the risks? According to Novavax, one of the risks is that it doesn't work or it lowers your immunity. Look at their list of potential risks, maybe allergic reactions.
Now, to be clear,
yeah,
this is Novavax's own documents.
This is their vaccine fact sheet. It says, limitations of vaccine effectiveness, that it just may not protect all vaccine recipients. That's number five. Like, it may just not work on you. That's one of them. Also, look at number 5.4, altered immunocompetence, like it may lower your immunity. Don't we take these to increase our immunity? I thought that was the point, but maybe I'm missing the point. Also, of course, myocarditis and pericarditis. Interesting, though, that those things are listed and have been observed in Novavax, because that makes me think that the myocarditis reaction is less related to mRNA technology and more related to something in these vaccines' commonality, because this is not, remember, it's not an mRNA technology vaccine. They also had, in the original study of the original vaccine, they had several people who had cardiomyopathy and cardiac failure, many of them hospitalized. So we learned recently from a study in Europe that participants can be screened for heart inflammation after COVID vaccines by testing the troponin in their bloods. And if you see it, if you see high markers, you think, oh, that person has some heart inflammation, you better not exercise or exert yourself in the next 2 weeks and we'll test it again. And if you're better, then you're all good. So we have the technology to protect people from being harmed by this myocarditis, but we lack the inspiration to do so because we think just putting it on the fact sheet is enough. We just don't do it. And lastly, are they effective? Meaning, do they protect against severe COVID, hospitalization, and death? Well, we can't possibly know that if they weren't tried, but the original vaccine trial shows some reduction in reported COVID cases and hospitalizations following this vaccine. But given that we know how overreported COVID cases were and how the CDC bases its idea of success of the vaccine based on rates of patients on ventilators, we just can't say that right now. Nobody really can. So we've seen during the pandemic that sometimes the FDA is giving this emergency use authorization to a drug, and then they do the clinical trials after. That's what happened last fall when we got the boosters in the fall of 2021. They said, well, we only tested it on 8 mice, but we are continuing to do tests. We are running clinical trials now. They started at the same time that they started rolling out the vaccine. I don't know if you remember that. It was a whole year ago. They don't seem to have a plan to do that this year. But what they will do, because it's required by law, is phase 4 or post-marketing trials. What that means is they study and collect adverse events as it's rolled out, because the vaccine makers are required to collect and report that data. Doctors are not. The whole adverse events, it's a bit of a sham, but at least the pharmaceuticals are required to report that. So basically, that means you, if you take this, are the first clinical trial. So if you go and take it, you should at least have this informed consent that this has not been tested on anybody. I am the clinical trial. So if you take it, you should know that, right?
Right.
The CDC has already recommended this Novavax vaccine. They did it when they recommended the Pfizer and Moderna vaccine last month, but they're going to sort of update their recommendation so it goes into the schedule and taxpayers will pay for it on the federal government. Novavax says they have 6 million doses ready to ship. So
sign me up.
Based on all of that data, let us know what you think. You are still at a free will to choose. And
are we?
That's what we get. In some places, some people in some places. I have seen vaccine mandates come back in certain universities as well.
Well, in Canada, we know that there absolutely are mandates for doctors. And so in British Columbia specifically, doctors who are being forced to take it and have to, they're going to be moving or they have to do it. Otherwise, they're going to lose their medical license, actually. Unbelievable. Let us know your thoughts on that in the comments below. Again, Dr. Makis is going to be joining us here in a few minutes. And for that, we're going to have to go exclusively over to Rumble because we won't be able to talk about it here on this platform. The conversation will be censored, so we won't be able to do it. We do have a Rumble channel, and it is rumble.com is where we go. rumble.com/redacted is where we're going to be doing that segment a little bit later in the show, but we're still on YouTube for now because our next segment we can at least be here. I guess we'll see, find out if we can be or not. We'll try to get there in a second, but first let's tell you about our friends over at Lear Capital. I don't know if you saw yesterday, but holy smokes, in one day, the United States government added almost a $300 billion debt to the bottom $333 trillion in debt. Unbelievable numbers that the U.S. government just added. Why? Well, Social Security checks went out. That was one big reason why. But the United States government is on a downward spiral, a debt spiral. And no wonder there's a huge fight in Congress over, you know, how much money can we give to Ukraine? We can keep the government open. Can we also fund the war in Ukraine? We can't really take care of people back home in the United States, but let's give money to Ukraine. Anyway, our friends over at Lear Capital can help you get up and running and protected against this crazy inflationary environment right now, investing in gold and silver. And you can get your free gold and silver investor guide just by going to their website, learredacted.com. And guess what? You can receive up to $15,000 in free bonus metals with a qualified purchase. And Lear is fantastic. They will basically help you get set up with purchasing precious metals or converting part of your IRA or your 401k into a gold and silver IRA. And you can call Lear Capital on their 1-800 number, which is great, and they love to talk to you on the phone. Go to 1-800-613-3557. And even if you've got like $1,000 in savings or a few hundred dollars and you're thinking, okay, should I convert some of that into a hard asset like gold coins, silver coins? And you can store it off-site in storage, or you can keep it in a safe that you control. We like to make sure that we keep it off-site in our purchases of silver. Natalie and I just bought a new round of silver because of the prices right now. Very, very affordable for silver. Anyway, they will help you through that whole process. So call them today, 1-800-613-3557, or go to the website learredacted.com and get your free gold and silver investor guide and see if it's a good fit for you, and they will take care of you. They are fantastic. So our thanks to Lear Capital for supporting what we do here. And so here's, just show you, we got these the other day. These are just some of the silver. This is fine silver. Let me pull it out. My camera, if you would, Grim.
It doesn't just come out of there so easily, Scrooge McDuck.
No, it's like, I don't swim in it like Scrooge McDuck, but this is pretty darn heavy. So this is one of the silver bars that you could get, and this is one of the gold coins. This is 1 ounce. This is 1 ounce of fine gold. 1 ounce of fine gold that you can get shipped right to you. So that's what Lear Capital can do. They will send that right to you, all protected and taken care of. So thanks to Lear.
All right. Well, the federal government is trying to... Let me take that again.
Take two.
The federal government is trying an old trick to regulate the internet called net neutrality. Remember this?
It's bring it back.
2015.
Bring it back.
They say it's because they want free speech and fairness on the internet. That's a good joke, isn't it? Since when does the federal government want free speech and fairness on the internet? They don't want that, really. It's a power grab using an old trick. It's an old dog and an old trick. So we're not going to fall for it. Let's talk about it. Now, I remember, you know, covering this a lot when I was a tech reporter with CNET, and I was like, oh, net neutrality, it's kind of boring. But it's not now, because it's back in a way that's just so transparent of a power grab. And we have seen that without net neutrality, the terrible warnings that, you know, sort of leftist Democrats had warned about did not come to fruition. So quickly, net neutrality is the notion that the FCC can create laws that would prevent internet service providers or ISPs from prioritizing, slowing down, or blocking content online. Now, keep that word blocking in mind. This was an Obama era law, and it was struck down during the Trump administration. California, incidentally, tried to put it back just in California, and that also was struck down in the courts. Net neutrality is kind of a double negative concept. It's preventing ISPs from changing the speed that they deliver different data to you, different websites. Now, why, you may ask yourself, would the federal government try this again right now? Is it because they've been told that they can no longer censor speech on the internet? That might be it. Is it because this, they're taking it to the Supreme Court, the fact that they're told that they can't censor social media? So this is another, it's a workaround, right? And so if they can't censor you, then you can tell the FCC to punish companies that are getting you that information. So Google would be told, hey, you know, don't get those YouTube videos that we don't like to people in a quick manner, throttle that redacted, because we don't like what they're saying, right? And Google would sort of understand in an implied consent what they had to do. Now, here is some of the, you know, old warnings that Democrats were crying bloody murder that this would ruin the internet once and for all when it was taken out of commission by President Trump. Here a few oldies but goodies that the Free Beacon found. This one from NBC said that when we removed net neutrality, it would marginalize LGBTQ people because their corner of the internet would be slowed down. Boy, did that not age well. Right. That's exactly the opposite of what happened. Since the end of net neutrality, the internet has become more LGBTQ. That community has not been regulated to a corner, a dark corner anywhere. They are hot and heavy everywhere. It's certainly not less.
It's the opposite. Exactly.
It's the opposite. Yeah.
If you speak out and comment, you have any comments on that, you will be blocked and banned and taken off the internet.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. So that didn't come to fruition. Those LGBTQ groups that were worried about not being able to reach each other on the internet with the end of net neutrality. No, that didn't happen. Most of the opposition was about, you know, what you wouldn't see on the internet. That's what Democrats were saying. They were saying they wanted free speech. Well, now Democrats are on the totally other side. So I wonder how they're going to argue for net neutrality when net neutrality is really about free speech, when they hate free speech. I don't know how they're going to be able to make that leap. Here's Bernie Sanders warning about net neutrality back in 2017. Watch.
A disastrous decision. It will impact every American. It will give huge advantages to big corporations over small businesses, to big media companies over smaller media outlets. We've got to do everything we can to defeat this thing in the courts and defeat it legislatively.
Okay. Al Franken spoke about it. He said that it would destroy free speech. Again, remember, Democrats once said they were all for free speech. It's hard to believe, but listen, he said it.
Everyone except these ISPs benefits from an open internet. That's the only people who benefit from it. Our Comcast and Verizon and AT&T, that's it. It's like a handful of companies. And not only is this about business, and it is about business and innovation, it's also about freedom of speech.
Yes!
Woo! Ooh, yeah, remember they used to like that. Yeah, let's hear it.
Because of net neutrality, we're free to yell like that. No, that's not true. I overclaimed for net neutrality just at that moment. But everyone can see it online because of net neutrality, us yelling for freedom of speech. This means that Fox News and the New York Times and your political blog post travel at the same speed. The last thing we need is a few mega corporations controlling information.
Okay,
wow.
Only that's exactly what we have now, and Democrats like that. they do want a few megla, whatever that means, corporations controlling speech and content for your safety. They want that. So how can they argue for net neutrality and then also stand against free speech? It's going to be really hard for them to make that case if they want to, if we really want to have this fight again. Social media companies do control information at the behest of the government. So do we want to allow them equal access after this nefarious censorship that they practiced during the pandemic? Well, here's what the FCC wants, this plan put forward by Jessica Rosenworcel. She's saying that here is her notice to reinstate net neutrality because she said it will give them the authority necessary to safeguard the open internet, advance national security, and protect public safety. Okay, that's where I am out. We know now that when you get a federal government and allow them the power for public safety, that's not usually how they use it unless they're a judicial branch. The FCC is not. The Wall Street Journal even spoke out against this, saying that this is like taking us back to the 1930s because broadband providers under these rules wouldn't know what practices are forbidden until the FCC knocked on their door to find them. Well, what do you think they would do that for? For content they don't like. Clearly, that's what we've seen them do anyway. Then the rest of the industry would just be on notice. Like, well, don't do what they did. They got in trouble. What are they getting in trouble for? We don't know, but they got a spanking. And so the Wall Street Journal says this regulation saves the FCC the trouble of conducting a formal rulemaking with notice and comment because they're not really laying out what they don't want you to do. They'll just punish you when they see they don't like it. And then they would decide which data delivery that they don't like, not based on rules again, but whether or not they could call a plan discriminatory, right? Oh, you didn't let Joe Schmo's blog through at the same speed as you let through this COVID misinformation. So you're going to be in trouble. Here is what the Wall Street Journal concludes. Why is Ms. Rosenworcel still trying to take us back to the 1930s? Because it means more government control over the airwaves. Simple as that. Well, duh. They have been told by a judge, the federal government, that they can't censor. They've been caught censoring. So it does seem now that even though they're fighting for their right to censor us, they're also going to fight for the right for those things to be delivered in a timely manner to the internet. And then you just push the brakes on things that you don't like. That seems to me the plan. Let me know if you think that we're wrong. It's not at all surprising, but can they do this? Here's an interesting take from Reason.com saying that there is reason to believe that they can't and that this won't stand up in court because of the precedence of this West Virginia versus the EPA decision, where the court relied on the so-called major questions doctrine to make it more difficult for agencies to expand their power. So it does seem that this would probably apply to net neutrality and it would again not survive a Supreme Court encounter. But who would be there to challenge it in court? Most likely big tech, the same way they did challenge net neutrality 10 years ago. So we may see another fight and we'll see how they argue it, right? It's interesting. It's interesting because, like I said, if you are the kind of person who consumes things that the government doesn't want you to consume, you may not get free access to those things in the future if the FCC gets this power grab.
Interesting.
Is it?
Yeah, it is. I mean, well, it's amazing that they're bringing it back again. This is the United States' move towards, you know, Online Safety Act, Online Censorship Act. We're seeing it in the UK. We're seeing it in Germany. We're seeing it in Canada. So this is the US version brought back to life once again by the FCC.
Yes.
Try it again. See if it'll work.
All right. Let us know what you think of that.
Yeah, we've got more news to get to. In a moment, we are going to be heading over to Rumble because we cannot do this next story here on YouTube. It will be censored and we cannot do it. Absolutely cannot do it. They will shut us down for even talking about it. So we can't do it. So our channel over there is rumble.com/redacted. That's where we are going to go. You guys can choose to do whatever you like, but we've got tens of thousands of people watching us live right now over there. So it's totally up to you what you'd like to do. But first, hey, we got our store up and running. Grim was able to add a whole bunch of our new designs to our storefront. If you go to redactedstore.com and check out everything that we've got up there. Now, we don't have the new videos here to show you on this page at the moment, but Mark my words, when you go to redactedstore.com, you're going to see a whole slew of brand new merch, all there in time for the fall and holiday season. Very, very exciting. We've got a whole bunch of our new shirts. What is the new, the passive aggressive, what is it called?
Non-pacifist peace.
You don't even know what it is. It's your phrase.
I know.
The non-pacifist peace extremists?
Non-pacifist peace extremists.
Non-pacifist peace extremists.
Non-pacifist okay. peace extremists.
I like passive aggressive. That's I want to get one that just says passive aggressive. But anyway,
you'll
find those shirts over there as well. We love it because it's the most ridiculous name in the world, the non-pacivist peace
extremists.
It's
extremist. Not ridiculous.
It is ridiculous.
It's a bullseye.
It's amazing. Yeah, but anyway, that's there. You can go there now and check it out. All of the new merch. If you want to support independent journalism, and again, we do not mark the prices up at all beyond what they the cost of them to print and get them out the door. We just make very, very little on these. So we try to keep the costs really, really low. But if you want to support our show and keep the lights on here, you can do that. Plus, you can wear some of your cool merch out and about. That gray hat on the bottom of your screen is my favorite dog walking hat, my redacted hat. So go there. Redactedstore.com is the place to go. Redactedstore.com. Is the mainstream medical community ignoring the rise of cancers among young people, the complete adverse events that we're seeing among young people over the past 6 months to a year following the COVID-19 vaccine? Heck, we just had the Nobel Prize awarded to individuals related to the COVID vaccine. Are they turning a blind eye to what's actually happening? And the rise of what is being called turbo cancers, fast-growing turbo cancers, COVID-19 mRNA vaccine-induced turbo cancers, lymphoma, leukemias, brain, breast, colon, lung cancers, all very aggressive. Now, the mainstream establishment will say there's nothing to see here. There's no evidence of that. But our next guest says quite the opposite. Dr. William Mackus is a cancer expert, chief of oncology at the Wellness Center in Canada with over 100 published papers. And he joins us now to dive into this latest data. Doctor, welcome to the show.
Thank you very much for having me.
So what are you seeing? What are you seeing over the past 6 months? I've seen, you know, going through your Twitter feed is really, really disturbing because you can just scroll all the way down your Twitter profile and you will see all sorts of young people, profiles of young people who have suddenly gotten non-Hodgkin's lymphoma, all sorts of aggressive cancers. These young people have had GoFundMe pages set up, but just going through your timeline, it's just child after child after child. Does it appear to be getting worse? What's going on here?
You know, I've noticed this phenomenon of these very aggressive cancers in COVID-19 vaccinated individuals. I first noticed this phenomenon when I was tracking the sudden deaths of Canadian doctors. Now, Canadian doctors were forced to have COVID-19 vaccines. We had vaccine mandates throughout Canada. You had to have at least 2 COVID vaccines to keep your job as a physician. And young physicians were developing very aggressive cancers. These were brain cancers, I noticed. These were lymphomas, leukemias. And then you start getting the solid tumors like, you know, the breast cancers, the colon cancers, gastric cancers. But these were young people. These were people in their 20s, 30s, and they were presenting at stage 4. So these were not cancers that were presenting at stage 1 or stage 2. These were presenting at stage 4 metastatic cancers, very rapidly growing tumors. So oncologists were very surprised to see these tumors and the rate at which they were growing. They would grow to very large sizes. Some of these tumors, you know, we're talking 10 centimeter, 15 centimeter tumors. They were being described as football sized tumors, sometimes even watermelon sized tumors. And oncologists would struggle to treat these tumors. You know, they might try to surgically resect some of them, and then they would discover that they had spread further or much faster than they thought. And so the behavior of these tumors was unlike anything I had seen before. And these are people in their 20s, 30s, 40s. I was seeing it in medical students, medical residents who had to have at least 2 vaccines to stay in their medical programs, for example. I saw it in nursing students. Same issue. You know, we had these university mandates, college mandates. Universities and colleges were mandating, you know, 2 shots or 3 shots, booster shots for people to stay in their programs. This is where this explosion of turbo cancers is happening.
Now, you have a lot of detractors, as you know, when you've you, along with Dr. Peter McCullough, friend of the show, Robert Malone, friend of the show, Pierre Corey, friend of the show, any of you guys who have spoken out against this, you'd get vilified, of course, as a result of this. So Reuters, the preeminent news publication, in bed with MI6, just so you have some background and awareness of the deep state connections to the likes of the Associated Press and Reuters. They published a piece on you saying there's no evidence of this. You've been fact checked by Reuters, Dr. Mackis. No evidence COVID-19 vaccines cause turbo cancers, and the Reuters fact check team is all over this. And they go through to point out that what the evidence shows, there's zero basis for any of the things being claimed here, says Dr. Gigi Granval, immunology expert, completely made up and none of it's true. And they cite four other experts of cancer medicine and oncology at Imperial College of London, University of Edinburgh, radiologists in Edinburgh, saying these cancers are no more aggressive and they shouldn't be really called turbo cancers. What do you say to that?
Well, you know, I've been fact-checked before when it came to the sudden deaths of Canadian doctors. And, you know, I had Reuters and Associated Press telling me that there's no evidence that vaccines are harming doctors who've been COVID vaccinated. And we actually put together a big database of Canadian doctor deaths. We tracked these deaths over a period of several years, and we found excess mortality of over 50% of vaccinated Canadian doctors in 2022. I just submitted that evidence and that database to the National Citizens Inquiry here in Canada. So I've sort of faced this before. And what you see with these fact checks is they have nothing to back up their claims. And so, for example, you've got doctors, you've got pathologists like Dr. Ryan Cole staining some of these tumors and finding the spike protein present in these large lymphoma tumors, for example. Professor Arne Burkhardt, a pathologist in Germany, again, staining for the spike protein, discovering that there's spike protein all over these tumors. It shouldn't be there. Now, this is the COVID vaccine spike protein. We don't know what it's doing there. We have these recent discoveries of DNA plasmid contamination of the Pfizer and mRNA vials. This is a discovery by Kevin McKernan, U.S. geneticist, confirmed by cancer genomics expert Dr. Philip Burkhardt, who's just testified to the South Carolina Senate at a Senate hearing that he confirmed, yes, there is contamination, DNA contamination, which could, you know, integrate into our genome. And if it integrates in the wrong place, it could be causing cancers. There was discovery of the SV40, simian virus 40 promoter in the Pfizer vaccine, again, by these same teams. So, you know, when you look at these fact checks, what's interesting is that they'll tell you it's not happening, but they'll give you absolutely no evidence to back up their claims because these phenomena are not being investigated.
Right. When you go through their data here in Reuters fact check, they're citing doctors, but they're not actually presenting evidence. They do say, a spokesperson for the Vaccine Knowledge Project says this latest detection and management of colorectal cancer in England said there were a smaller number of cancer diagnoses during the COVID-19 pandemic, potentially due to longer waits to see a doctor. So that, of course, now you would have new cancers as a result of now we're opened up again. You can go back to the doctor. Of course, you're going to see more cancer diagnoses. What do you say to that? Because it sounds like a valid argument, but when you get into the data that we've researched here, it doesn't really hold up.
Well, you know, you could see a little bit of that effect if you've missed a bunch of screenings or if you've had cancellations of cancer appointments, for example, for a period of 6 months. You would expect that some of those cancers might present at a later stage. So you might have a stage one cancer that now has become a stage two, or a stage two that's become a stage three. But the overall behavior of the tumors themselves wouldn't change. So you still shouldn't see cancers presenting, you know, for example, you shouldn't see stage four cancers presenting in young women in their 20s. You shouldn't see stage four colon cancer presenting in men and women in their 20s and 30s. And these cancers shouldn't be killing people in a matter of 6 to 12 months, which is what we're seeing with these turbo cancers. It's the behavior and the progression. The progression is so rapid that when you look at these cancer patients and they go on their GoFundMe, they're, you know, they're raising money for their cancer treatments, for example, and they will tell you, my oncologist has told me they've never seen anything like this. They've never seen tumor growth at this rate. They've never seen this kind of progression. And some of these cancers are so rapidly lethal that the leukemias can kill you in a matter of weeks, days, even hours after diagnosis. I've reported cases of young people who went to eMERGE feeling ill. They were found to have leukemia, and they died several hours after diagnosis. The oncologists didn't even have time to start treatment. The progression was that rapid. So it's not just that we're seeing more cancer cases, but it's the behavior is completely different. I think, honestly, we're dealing with a phenomenon we've never seen before. And it's a phenomenon that oncologists shouldn't be denying. They should be investigating it, have an open mind, because there's mechanisms by which the mRNA vaccines are influencing the immune system, affecting the immune system. You've got this issue of the, you know, DNA contamination, which is a very serious issue. Now there's testimony in the South Carolina Senate hearings. So, you know, there are plausible mechanisms by which this could be happening. To just put out a blank statement and say, no, you know, this can't happen, I think, honestly, it's medical malpractice.
I want to get back to the DNA contamination in just a second. But first, kids and getting these new round of shots. I mean, there's pushes by the government, right, to include this as part of their vaccine schedule. I mean, Robert F. Kennedy Jr. talks about growing up. He had six vaccines. Now there's what, like over 20 that children are given. But now we're going to include these COVID vaccines as part of a routine schedule for children. What do you say to that and the evidence that how damaging this could be for children?
You know, I'm seeing evidence of damage to the immune systems of kids. And I first noticed this, again, it was about a year ago, and there was a very aggressive rollout of COVID vaccines in children in Canada. So they first came for the group 12 to 19 years old. Now over 80% of these kids in Canada have had at least two shots. Many of them have had booster shots. And then, of course, they came for kids 5 to 11 years old with two shots, and now they're pushing these vaccines, including the latest boosters. They're pushing them in babies as young as 6 months old. And they're saying that babies, you know, from 6 months to kids 4 years old should get at least two shots if they haven't had any COVID shots before. So they've rolled out the vaccines in these kids. They've done no safety studies on kids. And they have no idea what the long-term effects on these kids' immune systems are. From what I'm seeing anecdotally, it looks like the vaccines are damaging the immune systems of these kids. You know, about 6 to 12 months after the rollout of the vaccines in Canada, we had the worst flu season ever. We had tens of thousands of kids who were sick, home from school. We had schools that were 20-30% empty. This was November, December of last year, 2022. Australia just went through the worst flu season that they've ever had a few months ago. Same phenomenon in the UK. So wherever you had rollout of vaccines in kids, you know, within a year, you had the worst flu season and kids, healthy kids, dying of the flu. In Canada, we had at least 13 kids die of the flu. These were not kids with pre-existing health conditions. These were healthy kids. It was a record. And we had half the provinces in Canada actually refused to release information on how many kids died of the flu last year. They were hiding the data. And so, you know, this is an issue. It's not just the immune system in kids. I'm starting to see these cancers, in these turbo cancers in kids as well. And it's most commonly leukemias, lymphomas. When you start to get, you know, age 18, 19, these kids are going to college, they're going to university, they're forced to take these COVID vaccines, they're mandated to take them. They're starting to come down with these very aggressive cancers. I've reported a bunch of them recently. You know, very aggressive stage four cancers. These are 19-year-old kids coming down with stage four cancers. It's just shocking.
So glad that we didn't do that in our family. But, you know, we lost a lot of friends. You know, I'm sure a lot of people can relate to that, who were pushing this all over social media, you know, go get your kids vaccinated and moms groups and so forth. And we said, absolutely not. Or we would never do that to our children. And, you know, it was the propaganda and the media push was tremendous. And so there was a lot of guilt going around for people who were doing this, and also for people who weren't doing this. There was a lot of guilt. You were made to feel like an outcast and a sort of social pariah if you didn't do this. And a lot of people's livelihoods, you guys know in Canada, of course, with a trucker convoy and people saying, oh, we're not doing this to our bodies. We're not going to force, just so we can cross the border and put food on our table as a family, being forced to take a vaccine. But I think you're seeing these governments haven't learned their lesson and they're doubling down on this.
One of the worst things that I saw during the pandemic was, and this was in Canada, was when they mandated kids ages 12 and up to take the shots to be able to continue playing sports. And you know how popular hockey is in Canada. So we had hockey players in Canada. If you were 12 years old or older, you could not access the hockey arenas. You couldn't play hockey unless you took two shots. And I've seen several young, healthy Canadian hockey players drop dead. The issue of myocarditis with the vaccines, which could be happening, you know, according to the Thailand study, could be happening as frequently as 1 in 30, 1 in 35 kids could be coming down with some kind of heart damage just with one dose of the vaccine. Oh. With unpredictable effects. You know, of course, not all kids with the myocarditis will have a sudden cardiac arrest and will collapse, you know, on the ice or collapse on the field, you know, football players, basketball players, but there's damage to their hearts. And the fact that they mandated these shots on these kids just so they could be able to continue playing sports, to me, was one of the worst things I've seen during the pandemic.
Oh, absolutely awful. And you know, I think for so many young people, they went along because, you know, their parents said, well, we got to do this. We got to go and do it and just get it done. And I think there's a concern there. Well, at least the idea was after 6 months, maybe a year, you're in the clear now. But I think, correct me if I'm wrong, but we're seeing now from this data that if people that were vaccinated even longer than that are now seeing symptoms of cancers. They're seeing symptoms of this turbo cancer. So it wasn't something that, oh, you're in the clear if you got the shot 6 months ago. How far back can you track this now?
Well, I am seeing people come down with sudden cardiac events, with blood clots, and with the cancers, and they've had their last shot a year ago, a year and a half ago. I mean, sometimes you can, you know, they haven't had a shot since 2021 when let's say they had their booster shot back in, you know, November or December of 2021. And so there seems to be no safe period. The other thing that's showing up in the literature is that we're finding spike protein circulating in the bloodstream for longer periods. So it's now up to 6 months that, you know, you can find the spike protein circulating. We're finding mRNA for much longer periods. And again, this is why they won the Nobel Prize, Dr. Carrico and Dr. Drew Weissman. They won the Nobel Prize for modifying the RNA in such a way, artificially modifying it with the pseudouridine, that it would last much longer. And yet, you know, when they rolled out the vaccines, they said, oh, no, don't worry, the mRNA will be degraded after a few hours. It stays in your arm. And then, you know, it teaches your immune system to fight coronavirus. And after a few hours, it's degraded. And now we're finding it months later, still circulating, still producing spike protein. There's unknown quantities of spike protein that are being produced. They never tested this. You know, who's going to produce how much spike protein for what period of time? So you actually don't know how much spike protein exposure people have had.
Did the shots even work at all? I mean, if people got coronavirus shots and then they were getting coronavirus a few weeks later, they were getting boosters and then a few weeks later. I mean, famously, have members of the White House getting shots and then a few weeks later, well, don't worry about me. I've got coronavirus. I'm social distancing. I'm here. So did these things work at all?
You know, I initially was of the opinion that, you know, maybe because of the antibodies that they're detecting, that maybe, you know, you could get protection for a few months. I'm now much more of the opinion that these shots have never worked at all. In fact, quite the opposite is that they actually seemed to increase your risk of getting infected with COVID-19. You know, this came out of the Cleveland Clinic study of 50,000 healthcare workers where they actually tracked how many shots they took. And over time, they saw that the more shots you took, the more likely you were to get infected with COVID-19. We saw the same thing in our data that the Canadian government was giving us and the Australian government was giving us back in 2022. As time went on, you saw that the hospitals were filling up first with the double vaccinated, Then they were filling up with the triple vaccinated. Then, of course, the Canadian government stopped giving us data as to what was the vaccine status of the people in the hospitals and who were dying from COVID-19, because 90% of the people dying from COVID-19 were vaccinated. And it was led by those who had the most shots. So in Canada, it was the triple vaccinated who were dying the most, who were being hospitalized the most, who were in the intensive care units the most. We continued getting that data in Australia. And in Australia, by the end of 2022, it was the quadruple vaccinated who were leading the hospitalizations, the severe ICU admissions and deaths. And then the Australian government stopped showing us the data. So it really did seem like the more shots you got, the more likely you were to get infected with COVID-19, and you had negative vaccine efficacy, which meant you were doing worse than if you had never gotten vaccinated to begin with. So it really, all the evidence shows that these vaccines were damaging the immune systems of people who were taking them.
I mean, it's like we're living in a bizarro world, and you couldn't even write a novel like this. You talked about the South Carolina case. Can you talk a little bit about the corruption of the DNA and what specifically are we seeing there at the DNA level?
So it's very interesting because it comes out of the manufacturing process of these mRNA vaccines. When they make them, they actually put the spike protein sequence into DNA plasmids. So these are rings of DNA, and the reason they do it is because so they could put those DNA plasmids into E. coli, grow them in E. coli, grow billions and billions of copies, and then they transcribe them into the mRNA with the pseudouridine modifications. But they're supposed to get rid of all that DNA in the manufacturing process, you know, through enzymatic reactions. It's supposed to be cut up and purified and removed from the product so that you have just the pure mRNA product. And what U.S. geneticist Kevin McKernan discovered by accident when he was doing sequencing work was that these DNA plasmids persist, and he's finding them in the vials. So he would take vials, you know, that had a little bit of vaccine left, Pfizer vials, Moderna vials, and he found DNA contamination in these vials. And he didn't find just the DNA rings, but he found all kinds of fragments of DNA from those rings in those vials. And he reported that up to 30% of the genetic information in those vials was DNA contamination. It wasn't pure mRNA. And this has been verified by a number of labs around the world now. It's been verified in German labs. It's been verified in Japan. And Professor Philip Buchholz just verified it himself and testified about it at the South Carolina Senate hearing just a few weeks ago. The problem with this is that DNA integrates into our DNA much more easily. So now you're injecting foreign DNA that ends up systemically in your bloodstream. So we know it doesn't stay in the arm. It goes systemic. Now you're injecting this contamination, this foreign DNA that can very easily integrate into our genome. If it integrates into the wrong place, you could get a tumor suppressor gene knocked out. So now you're at a much higher risk of cancer. Or you could get, you know, proto-oncogenes activated. And this is one of the potential mechanisms by which these very aggressive cancers could be arising in people who are unfortunate enough to have gotten the contaminant and then had that integrate into their genome. So it's a very, very serious issue. You know, scientists and doctors like myself were really, really concerned about this because there's completely unforeseen effects from this contamination that they told us there is no contamination, and yet it's being found in Pfizer and Moderna vials.
I'll get you out of here on this, doctor, which is, do you see an appetite now for world governments, regional governments, county governments, et cetera, to get to the bottom of this and to examine and investigate how this happened? So it doesn't happen again, or are they still sort of willfully ignorant about this?
Well, I think part of it is that, you know, I think there are conservative politicians who absolutely want to get to the bottom of this. There are still very few of them. You know, you've got some conservative politicians in the UK, some in Canada. They're still afraid to come forward because they're afraid of being ostracized. They're afraid of being attacked by the media. However, as the public pushes more and more towards demanding answers as to what's happening. And again, you have so many deaths now, you can't cover it up. So, you know, I will get attacked online, you know, with these bot accounts on Twitter, these pharmaceutical bot accounts. And yet they're completely drowned out by people who are telling me, yes, we are experiencing the same thing. You know, my family members died of this cancer or were diagnosed with these stage four cancers, these turbo cancers. Mm-hmm. It's happening to too many people. I think the politicians, it's going to be the conservative politicians who are probably, some of them are still afraid to really speak up and face this issue head on. But I think it is coming because I think the people will demand it.
Yeah, hopefully. With a sea of people coming, there'll be a big sea change in that. Perhaps we'll see some more bravery coming out of the woodwork on this. Dr. William Mackus, thank you so much for your work. Thank you for your bravery in the face of the bots, the onslaught, the fact-checking, and all of that to present this information and to really make us aware of what's happening. We appreciate it.
Thank you very much for having me.
And thanks to all of you for subscribing and being a part of our great community here. We really, really appreciate it. Again, the show is totally free, so you can subscribe or follow us on Rumble or YouTube totally free. But if you would like to support independent media, independent journalism, we are not controlled by the biopharmaceutical complex. We are not billionaires. We don't have $10 million, just like David was talking about there in Canada. So if you would like to support us and join our Plus program, our Plus Club, where you get access to exclusive interviews and videos before anyone else, and be a part of our great locals community. We're actually launching our book club now with Natalie and other live streams as well. So for the price of a cup of coffee once a month, you can come over. Just go to redacted.inc. It's not .com, just redacted.inc. And then click on the right side of your screen there to join our community. And again, for the price of a cup of coffee once a month, you can support our team here at Redacted. Again, we are not funded by billionaires, so we are supported by you, the viewer. So thank you so much for letting us come into your houses every day and be able to do this show Monday through Thursday. We really, really appreciate it. We'll be back tomorrow at 4 p.m. Eastern time. So please be sure to join us then, and we will see you tomorrow afternoon, everyone. Have a great night.